Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the sixth day of November 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Hear about the Supreme Court, the EPA, and private property rights as it relates to water quality issues and what the AFBF has to say about it. And we'll take that up, by the way, during the Farm Assets Conference, too. Get your tickets, if you want, right now at 800-898-1065 or farmassetsconference.com. Along the way today, we'll check in on the agricultural cash grain market and the weather forecast. And then in the second half hour of the program, on many of these radio stations, Commodity Week comes up. Recorded last night a really interesting conversation with Jackie Vakes and Dan Zwicker. Believe it or not, we did not discuss the price of commodities. Stay with us for the whole hour, if you can, right here on Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, at the end of this week, futures finished the day lower in the corn pit. December contract, a penny and a half lower at $3.73. The March down one at $3.81 and 3/4. And May corn, 3/4 of a cent lower at $3.88 and 1/4. July down a quarter at $3.93 and 3/4. And December of next year at $4 a penny and a half, 3/4 of a cent lower. Soy complex, November beans up 3.5 cents at $8.71 and 1/4. January 8.67 and 1/4, up 3 and 1/4. The March at 8.69 and a half, 3 and 1/4 cents higher. July $8.80 and a half, up 3 and a half. And next year's November beans at 8.79 and a quarter, 5 and 1/4 cents higher. Bean meal futures down 70 cents at $2.95.70, and the bean oil for the day at $28.04, up 21 cents. Soft red winter wheat 3 cents lower at $5.23 and a quarter. July at $5.30, up 2 and a half for the harvest month. July harvest month next year, and for the hard red at $5.26 and 3/4, up 5 cents. Feeder cattle at $181.80, 17 and a half cents higher at this hour. January's are currently down 20 at 172.47 and a half. Live cattle are up 45 cents at $134.85. February at 137.15 are up 25, and lean hogs in the December are 55 cents lower at $54.85. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast at this bottom of this half hour. You can catch up with us then.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Here's what some of the outside markets are trading like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $44.36 a barrel, or 84 cents lower. Ethanol futures at $1.52 and 3 cents, up a penny and a half. The gasoline on the wholesale price, that's the RBOB, at $1.37 and a tenth. They're a penny higher for the day. And heating oil or diesel fuel is a half cent higher at $1.49 and 2 cents. Natural gas at $2.36 and 6 tenths of a cent per gallon is up 2 tenths of a cent. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,802 is unchanged. The dollar up 1.215. That's a big jump at 99.26. No doubt we'll discuss that in just a moment with Mike Zuzulo. And then we'll take up the gold futures as well. They're at currently trading at $10,087, and they're down $17.20. The two of those are quite likely related. Let's take a look at the weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area. Sunny skies, a high of 57 degrees. West-northwest winds at 13 to 16, gusting to 22. Tonight, mostly clear at a low of 38. Saturday, sunny and a high of 54. Saturday night, clear and 31 degrees. Northwest winds at 5 to 7. Sunday, sunny skies and 53. Clear on Sunday night and 31. And to start the work week, sunny on Monday and 54 degrees. The rest of the week will stay sunny on Tuesday, Veterans Day on Wednesday, a chance of showers with a high of 62, and Thursday of next week, more showers, but mostly sunny by the time we get to the afternoon, and 56 degrees. More on the weather at the bottom of the half hour.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
It is the 6th day of November, 2015. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Mike Zuzolo joins us from his office in Atchison, Kansas at his global commodity analytics and consulting firm. Thanks, Michael, for being with us. I know we started out this morning talking about a whole lot of things, and we took up for just a bit the dollar, but it has really jumped today. What was behind that move?
Well, the big news, obviously, is the jobs data. It more than beat expectations, Todd. And I think by the way you're seeing the bond yields make multi-month highs in the 10-year and 2-year highs, I believe, in the 2-year yields, this type of rally of, I think on the week, we're going to close the dollar index up about 2.5% for the December contract. And by the way the market's acting, whether you're looking at gold or the bonds or the S&P 500 or the dollar itself, I don't think there's any disagreement out there that the trade is now expecting nearly 100% likelihood that the Federal Reserve will move and start their liftoff in December. And that meeting comes up around December 16th. And so this is an interesting quandary because, you know, as you look at this whole thing and you go back to all the way back to the financial crisis and the fact that we literally have been in this type of policy all for almost a decade, you kind of lose sense of how long we've been in this type of monetary policy. And I hope they do raise rates because I think it takes away the fear in the market, especially the emerging markets, that you have to keep the currency war going. In other words, you have to keep pressuring and devaluing your own currency through more quantitative easing. The People's Bank of China is ramping up potentially to do that again next month. The European Central Bank is potentially ramping up to do it again. Even the Bank of Japan kind of talked about it in their recent comments. And so if the Fed goes ahead and raises rates and supports the dollar and allows it to appreciate, that by default takes care of what these other countries want to do, and that is weaken their currency. I think the other thing that I picked up this week, I was able to listen to a former head of a branch, a Kansas City Fed branch president, speak here at the Benedictine College in Atchison, and he made it very clear in his view that the equity markets are clearly running on the Federal Reserve policy. And every time the Federal Reserve does not raise rates, it boosts the investment in equities even more. So if you look at it from a standpoint of commodities, maybe the fact that if the Fed starts to raise rates takes away the punch bowl, so to speak, away from the equities markets, then maybe you can start talking about investment allocation finally getting back into the commodities. So I would welcome that type of an increase in December. And I would also finish with this. I don't think the Fed has done a bad job at all. I think the Fed's actually done a really good job. The financial markets are making it extra difficult on them, and the Chinese economy is making it extra difficult on them. And they've been pretty clear. They are in no hurry to raise rates month after month after month. So it leads me to think maybe it'll be a one-then-done type rate hike. In other words, they'll raise it by a quarter point in December and then probably hands off all the way to March of next year. And I would like to see that as well.
All right. So let's stay with the dollar just for a little bit, because I'm looking at the monthly chart at the moment. We're up against what would be, I suppose, considered pretty stiff resistance.
Right.
And if we break through this to the top side, and I check the daily and the weekly both, and there aren't any gaps or exhaustion gaps or any of those sorts of things that are present at this point, if we break through the top side, we haven't been in that area at least for any length of time since the 1999 to 2003 time frame. We're above that area. How difficult does it become to export U.S. commodities?
I think it becomes difficult from a standpoint of what we've already seen in the weekly export inspections and weekly sales. And just to give you an idea of technicals, you know, we essentially went from 94 in the December index in the middle of October to 98 by the end of October. So within a half a month, we rallied eight full points in the dollar. If we take that 98 as our bottom layer now and we rally 4 points, if we rally another 4 points in that dollar. That would take us from 98 up 4 to 102. You get up to 102 and that really starts to stall out our export potential, and it also really starts to stall out and keep pressure on the crude oil. Because keep in mind, if you look at the relationship between crude oil and the dollar right now on an 18-month or 24-month basis, ever since the middle of last year, you have run about a negative 95-97% correlation or relationship between the two. So the higher the dollar goes, almost a one-for-one move to the opposite direction is where the crude's likely going to go. We saw that this week. 2.5% higher in the dollar led to 5% lower in the crude oil market. So continues to keep the investment allocation on the sidelines, unfortunately. And that's, but this is where I think the bright light is that if we do get that rate hike in December, I think we've priced a lot of dollar bullishness already into the market, and we maybe don't need to go to that 102 level.
Okay. Did I lead you down a primrose path here? Is this the right place we should have gone this afternoon?
No, this is fine. And, you know, it's funny because I did listen to the Commodity Week comments, and I thought they were extremely thought-provoking, and I agree with you. I think you need to listen to those, especially going into that Farm Assets Conference. And I was doing some research earlier this week ahead of this conference that you're putting on, and it just struck me because one of the comments that I highlighted from a USDA agriculture yearbook, I won't tell you the year yet, but it says many developed countries are experiencing high rates of unemployment, reduced income in a number of developing countries. Slower growth will be necessary because of balance payments. Also, a stronger dollar makes our ag products more expensive. Blah, blah, blah. That was 1982 going into 1983. It's like no matter how much things change, the more they stay the same.
Oh, dude, that's a bad time.
Well, and it just gives you an idea that that's kind of what we're facing with. That's why the markets are so negative right now when it comes to the farm exports, is because the trade thinks the dollar's going higher. But I would argue the trade thinks the dollar's going higher because the Federal Reserve's not ready to raise their rates, except for now today they are.
Yeah, they probably are. We've got starting to get things in place, and interest rates can begin to move. The trade will feel better about that. That'll make commodities on the market, soft commodities, the grains, the oil seeds, some other things, really more capable, I suppose, of being moved across national boundaries.
Yeah, and I think this is the other point I would draw out real quickly, Todd, is that when you get this long of a dollar rally, look what happened in 83. We had a pretty substantial weather event. Nobody cared about the dollar when that weather event happened. The supply side took over and the weather took over again. And that's what happens when you take prices down for so long. You are increasing demand. I mean, Brazil, the ag attaché just came out a few minutes ago with Brazil's update on their 2015-2016 production, keeping corn for the first crop still down 6%. Versus last year. The Baker Hughes oil rig report, 10th week in a row we've cut oil rigs. We've got about 572 rigs operating. We had 1,570 a year ago. So the price action is doing its job. And then if you throw on top of that something would happen in the weather, look out, because it could be an 83 type market.
We probably ought to take up livestock for the week. What'd you see there?
Well, unfortunately, the meat numbers that just came through from USDA showed another 1 pound increase for dressed cattle weights, another 1 pound increase for dressed hog weights. This is seasonally not a good time to find the bigger weights and bigger numbers. I do think that they've overdone it to the downside in the hogs, especially because of the dollar. And I think if you would find a little bit of supportive news in terms of export news on Tuesday's report, because keep in mind, with USDA's report, we also get grain and meat news. If you get a little bit of supportive reports in the hogs on Tuesday, maybe they'll come back and trade the supportive export and import data that we saw on the pork numbers yesterday. So I'm looking for a flat to higher hog market next week. If I would get that, then I think the cattle would find some support as well.
The beef cattle folks had done a pretty good job of not expanding so much. They started putting on a lot more weight, especially with the corn as cheap as it is at this point. However, they began to hold back as well, some of the breeding herds or breed stock. So is this going to all compile into a rough winter and early spring for them?
I think you probably have into the holidays to have to work through these numbers. I do get the sense out here that guys are starting to get more current. They have a couple more loads as opposed to eight more loads to get off hands, you know, that kind of thing. So I think they're through the midway point of it, and I would say probably another 4 weeks from now, they'll be very, very current, at least out here based upon the people I work with.
Hey, thanks so much for being with me this afternoon.
Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. That, of course, Mike Zuzlow. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Joins us each and every Friday afternoon. I gave him a heads up this morning that the Commodity Week program was really good. You should stick around for the second half hour today on most of these radio stations. Again, tomorrow morning on many of them as well. And online at willag.org already. Commodity Week with Jackie Vakes and Dan Zwicker. Again, we did not discuss the price of commodities in this one exactly. I don't think we took them up at all, if I remember correctly. And we went about 40 minutes, so you'll want to hear it online so you can hear the whole of it, but the bulk of it, a good portion of it, in just a few minutes here on many of these radio stations. The other thing is, if you have not bought, purchased your Farm Assets Conference ticket, right now today is the time to do it. You're going to hear in just a moment something about the Supreme Court as it relates to nutrients and what's been happening on the farm. Other places, we're going to take that up during the Farm Assets Conference, nutrient loss and the strategy that's being deployed in Illinois voluntarily at the moment, and what happens if it doesn't work, and what that means with US EPA, the Clean Water Act, Supreme Court. We'll talk about the land values as it relates to dollar, no doubt. And we'll take up, of course, the price of commodities. A whole bunch of things, really important stuff. If you haven't decided to come for just this $30 cost, thanks to our sponsors, by the way. The major ones are TIA, CREF, Farm Credit, and, of course, Syngenta for making this so affordable. If you haven't yet signed up, pick up your ticket right now, 800-898-1065. I really want you there, but most importantly, I think it's important that you be there. It should be a great learning experience, and I'm really looking forward to it. In today's agricultural news, the text of the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal is out there, and already there's a lot of speculation when Congress will take it up. It has much to offer for agriculture. Former Clinton USDA trade advisor Paul Drazik.
The president, if he notifies Congress today, he will have 90 calendar days to wait before he can send the bill up. Well, he's going to send the bill up if he gets the high sign from the leadership in Congress that they want him to do it and they're prepared to vote on it and maybe even vote on it much quicker than the deadlines allowed Congress to reflect on it.
However, next year's election will raise some speculation that a vote could be put off until after the election. Thanks, Drazik.
I think it's harder. Everybody is weighing what this means for them and what that means for the election, their election, the presidential election. But I just have a sense. I think most of agriculture is going to be very supportive of this.
Drazik is betting House and Senate leaders will want to get the U.S. back in the forefront of global trade. Without it, billions in market share could be lost to the Europeans and others.
So if we don't do this, we're going to be left out. I mean, we're going to start losing market shares fairly soon because we'll be paying high tariffs and other countries won't.
The TPT text shows Japan will end almost 60% of its pork tariffs within 11 years and 77% of its beef tariffs over 15 years. Vietnam's pork tariffs will be gone in 10 years. Soybean, corn, wheat, dairy, and many other commodities will see tariff relief immediately or over several years, and the TPP promotes science-based sanitary measures and timely dispute settlement systems. On the subject of red meat exports, U.S. pork exports showed modest improvement in the month of September, while beef exports endured the most difficult month in some time. That according to statistics released by USDA and compiled by the U.S. Meat Export Federation. September pork export volume was up 6% from year ago. Export value was about $456 million, down 11% year over year. but the highest since May. Exports to Mexico, the leading volume destination for U.S. pork, fell slightly in volume in September, but climbed 5% through the first 9 months of the year. Beef export volume fell 21% from a year ago. That's the lowest since January. Beef export volume fell some 21% from a year ago. That's the lowest since January. And finally today, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the Surface Transportation Reauthorization and Reform Act of 2015 yesterday. The bill is a multi-year reauthorization of highway transportation programs, which provides certainty for state and local governments to maintain and move forward with other transportation projects. It also provides new flexibility and streamlines environmental review and permitting processes aimed at accelerating some of those projects. The bill will now proceed to the Conference Committee with the Senate, which passed their version of the Surface Transportation Reauthorization Act back in July. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. If you haven't yet purchased your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference right now, today, great time to do it. 800-898-1065 or online at willag.org, farmassetsconference.com. Don't wait, just $30. Get your ticket today. Now, up next, you know, a petition filed with the U.S. Supreme Court this week by the American Farm Bureau ask for a review of lower court's rulings that allows the Environmental Protection Agency to manage local land use and development decisions under the Federal Clean Water Act. We'll have more. The American Farm Bureau recently asked the U.S. Supreme Court to hear arguments against a lower court ruling that gives the EPA broad powers to manage local water runoff. AFBF General Counsel Ellen Steen says the agency is on the cusp of establishing what she calls a nationwide super zoning authority, which threatens landowners, farmers, and ranchers, in her opinion, while undercutting local and state government legal authority. The lawsuit arose in the wake of EPA's blueprint for restoring the Chesapeake Bay, although the issue is of national scope.
This locks into place detailed allocations of allowable pollution among farmers, forestry, cities, urban runoff and municipal sewer systems, septic systems, allocating limits among all these sources based on that snapshot in time.
Farm Bureau does support cleaner watersheds in the Chesapeake Bay and around the nation, but it's fighting EPA's process for getting there, says Steen.
EPA has no business dictating land use and deciding these intensely local matters.
And Ellen Steen, again, who is general counsel for AFBF, says Congress decided the states should have the power to plan for clean water goals, and the states have the power to change those plans based on new information, better information, or changes in the facts. And she thinks this means that the people who care about local economies are the ones making local decisions, not the federal government. However, this can only happen, she says, if the Supreme Court decides to hear the case.
If EPA wins here and the court doesn't take this case, EPA is going to take this approach, this framework, and carry it out to other watersheds across the country.
Ellen Steen is with the American Farm Bureau Federation. She was discussing the EPA, the Clean Water Act, and the Supreme Court as it relates potentially to private property rights. It's an issue we will take up during the Farm Assets Conference at the end of this month in Normal, Illinois. For just $30, you can be there to hear this conversation with Mark David of the Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences Department that belongs to the College of ACES on campus. He helped design the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy. He'll give you the numbers behind it. And we'll hear from Dan Schaefer, the Director of Nutrient Stewardship at the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. They've been really hard on farmers as it relates to nutrient loss. Think about phosphorus and nitrogen. And then Jonathan Kappas will be here as well. He's an ag policy specialist from the College of ACES to tell you more about the potential problems in the legal system that could be created. They relate to what's happening in the Supreme Court, what happened in the Chesapeake Bay area, and also what's happening right now in Iowa in a couple of different places. You can hear about the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy during the Farm Assets Conference. Much more, farmassetsconference.com. Get your tickets right now, 800-898-1065, willag.org. Don't wait. Do it today, just $30.
It's National Nachos Day. In their simplest form, nachos are generally tortilla chips covered in melted cheese. The origin of nachos generally goes to a restaurant called the Victory Club, just across the U.S. border from Eagle Pass, Texas. Wives of several U.S. soldiers were visiting on a shopping trip and stopped by the restaurant after it had closed for the day, and the chef on duty invented a new dish for them with what little he had in the kitchen: tortillas and cheese. On this day in agricultural history in 1923, hyperinflation was running rampant in Europe. A loaf of bread cost 140 billion German marks. In 1976, David Marine died, an American pathologist. His research on the treatment of goiter with iodine led to the iodizing of table salt. Iodized table salt was first sold in the U.S. on May 1st of 1924. In 1986, President Ronald Reagan signed into law the Immigration Reform and Control Act, granting legal residency to most illegal immigrants who had been in the country continuously since January of 1982. And in 1993, the world's largest peanut butter and jelly sandwich was created in Peanut, Pennsylvania. It was almost 40 feet long and used 150 pounds of peanut butter and 50 pounds of jelly. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey. It sure doesn't feel like November out there. Temperatures so far in Illinois are running about 10 degrees above average. Rainfall was just a few tenths of an inch in northern and central Illinois. Meanwhile, areas south of Interstate 70 received between 0.5 and 1.5 inches of rain. From the Water Survey Network, 4-inch soil temperatures under the bare ground remain in the low to mid-60s across the state due to the recent warm weather. They probably won't drop into the 50s until the daytime temperatures drop into the 50s as well. Soil moisture looks good at the 2- and 4-inch levels, with some dryness still at the 8-inch level. According to the National Weather Service, highs on Saturday will range from the 50s in the north to the 60s in the south. Overnight lows will be in the 30 to 32 degree range. Sunday will be slightly cooler with highs in the mid-50s and lows in the 30 to 32 degree range again. Highs on Monday through Thursday will range from the low 50s in the north to the upper 50s and low 60s in the south. Overnight lows during the week will be in the 30s in the north and in the 40s in the south. There is a chance of rain on Wednesday and Thursday with rainfall totals of half an inch or less. The longer range forecasts indicate that the warmer and wetter conditions will prevail through the rest of November. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.